Beebe and Harris.
Who is calling on our Score hotline? It's brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois.
Who calling?
Hey! Ozzy!
You have been very great news to see. You got your own show. You earn it. You deserve it. Now you have it.
Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score.
First pitch to Ian Happ. Hit in the air, deep right field. This ball's got a chance. Back by the wall. Gone! Swinging a drive right center field and deep. This ball's got a chance. Gone! Kyle Tucker with a long ball. Bounced weakly to first, fielded by Bush. Underhand feed to Hodge. Cubs win the ball game. The Chicago Cubs beat the St. Louis Cardinals.
Welcome back. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. That was, of course, Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, Zach Zaidman coming to you from St. Louis. And the Cubs just with a whooping of the Cardinals. That's how you respond. Like, that's how you're able to come back after what happened in the first two games. And Ian Happ said on the first pitch, "What's up, Eric Fetty? I'm going to take this out of the yard." And then the Cubs proceeded to do so again and again and again. It was Reese McGuire. It was Ian Happ. It was also Ian Happ with the RBIs, by the way. It was Kyle Tucker chipping in with his 49th RBI of the season. Michael Bush with RBI number 45. Matt Schaub number 10. And the Cubs end up with an 8-0 win and now have a chance to at least split the series today on The Score against the St. Louis Cardinals.
What's crazy is that before that, Ian Happ was 1-for-11 career against Eric Fetty. He wasn't trying to wait around to see what was going to happen. First pitch, I'm setting the tone. But more important than the fact that the Cubs jumped out to a lead, because scoring has not been much of an issue during this dark stretch in which they lost 5 out of 6 games. The thing that gave me peace and solace, and apparently eventually made Dustin William Rhodes bored watching this game.
I know,
he said that this morning. I was like, all right, Dustin, we get it.
Hot garbage.
You're never going to be happy. The bottom of the first, because in the bottom of the first inning, I watched quickly as Matthew Boyd went out and said, oh, y'all been having issues with those shutdown innings? Watch this. 1, 2, 3, and on to the second.
Right.
And in the second inning, the Cubs scored 3 runs. And in the third inning, the Cubs tagged on another run. In the fourth inning, they scored 2 more runs. In the fifth inning, they scored another run. They scored in each of the first 5 innings. And every time they scored, Matthew Boyd went out there and said, nothing for you. Nothing for you.
And that's how you end up winning 8-0. And after losing 8-2 the previous day, I know that these are the games that Jed Hoyer, for example, says that's how you measure the success of your team is by these blowout wins. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, just because if we're watching every day, you can kind of see the moments where certain teams will struggle and where they won't. But that's the kind of game, again, if we're talking about thought process, which is the theme today, that's the kind of game which encourages him. You know, Kyle Tucker also getting in on the home run party the way he did. The heart of your lineup also doing work, except for Seiya Suzuki, but cool, because when everybody else has multi-hit games, you end up with 11. I know I said I loved Eric Fetty yesterday, by the way. I did love him for the Sox, and I thought that they should have gotten more in that trade. But I'm glad to see that at least he helped the Cubs out yesterday with that performance.
It's fine. It's fine. You know who else helped out the Cubs yesterday?
Yes.
The White Sox.
Yes.
Avoid the sweep. Just get a dub over Arizona. Get a dub over some of these teams. Sometimes just not getting swept is enough for the White Sox.
Are you kidding? That would be a .333 win percentage, which would be higher than they had had last season.
It would be, because last year was more like a .250. But this Cubs team, they had to have the dub, right? And as I'm watching Matthew Boyd go out there, inning after inning, throwing zero after zero, one thing rings true in my mind. I'm like, this guy really doesn't struggle much, does he? So I went to the game log, because I was like, I know I feel it, and I know he's pitched well lately, but I need to like actually take a look.
Let's
right?
look at the game log.
And so when I look at the game log, I see 16 starts after last night. The Cubs, they're only 8-8 in his starts, which isn't, you know, anything to...
No, that's not ideal.
No, it's not. But when you look at his game log, you realize this man has made 16 starts, and only once has he given up more than 3 runs in any of those starts. And that start, he gave up 4 runs. That is the model of consistency that leads me to believe Matthew Boyd is the most consistent player on the Cubs roster, not named Drew Pomeranz, because he hasn't given up a run. So,
and you're not saying pitcher. You're saying
player. Most consistent player. You know what you're getting from a guy who is now 7-3 on the season, a 2.65 ERA, 82 strikeouts in 91 2/3 innings, only 21 walks, a nice, crispy, clean whip this season of 1.102.
That works.
And giving up one home run per nine innings. I'm good with that.
Right, and as we saw with the contrast of Jameson Taillon yesterday, just how far and away the game can get from you when you give up those home runs, especially if there's a slight walk, and that's what happened. You know, there's only two walks issued, but when you've got guys on, that's how the runs add up. I feel like that's a very fair compliment. I asked the question in our pre-show meeting, and I think Matt Boyd has become, until we see what happens at a show, for example, today, he's the de facto stopper. It's not Jameson Taillon, even though we know he's done what he can, and we understand his role on this team. It's been Matt Boyd. What impresses me so much isn't just the renaissance that he has had. It's how he's been able to do it in these different ways. We talk a lot about pitchers learning how to pitch and not throw over the course of their careers. Matt Boyd famously was one of the strikeout leaders, you know, at the trade deadline in Major League Baseball in 2019. I know he attracted a lot of attention when he was with Detroit at the time. But you're seeing a different style now out of him and a different strategy, but one that is successful. So when I consider that and put it all together in this way where we saw what we saw out of him yesterday, where he goes six innings, gives up just three hits, and has those three strikeouts, you've got to like what you see. The no walks issued is just incredible, too. And the Cubs yesterday didn't issue a single walk as a pitching staff.
I know you're saying he's been de facto since the absence of Shota Imanaga, but...
And I guess fairly Justin Steele. You know, you have to factor Steele in, too.
No. To be clear, Imanaga is the stopper on the staff. They're only 5-3 in his starts this year, but that's just a smaller sample size. But since this man got to the Cubs, they're 28-9 in a game he starts. That is an immensely powerful record to have when a pitcher takes the mound.
Yeah, I'm also still... This was going to be a different season for me watching Shota, just because the league has developed more of a book on him, and we did see a little bit more of an aberration in the later part of last year. You know, he had a couple of stumbles, and we talked about those. Even just him walking four batters against the Dodgers. I know it's Japan, but these are just things you pay attention to when you're trying to pick up on patterns. That's all. That's all I'm trying to see. We know he's going to be limited today, too, in his work. That seems to be the understanding. You can hear that game coming up later today. We've got pregame with Zach Zaidman here on The Score starting at 12:40 as Shota returns to the mound. Pregame coverage is at that time. First pitch is at 1:15 on The Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. We get back to basketball talk. We still got a lot of texts coming in our text line and a lot of feedback. So who better to give that feedback to and shoot the breeze with, so to speak, than Joe Cali, the Bulls beat reporter for the Sun-Times. He asked a lot of the questions we heard of Mark Eversley yesterday. He joins us next on Raheem and Harris on The Score.
Hey, Ron, how are you this morning?
I am doing great, Mikey. David, how are you boys doing?
Doing well, Coom.
You know, it's fun in a way because, as you know, our resident producer here, Dustin Rhodes, lives and dies on a regular basis with the Cubs. And he was as despondent as I've seen him after the first two games of this series. And today, he's singing songs. He's skipping in the hallways.
He's facing better again now?
Oh, yeah. The world has been righted in Dustin's eyes. And it, you know,
oh boy, D, I love it, D.
See, but Ron, I mean, it really has been righted. You know, you go 20, you lose two games, then you shut them out for 22 innings. You get a great outing to set up the return of Shota, and he was everything you hoped he would be. He was the guy. It was like he never hurt a hamstring. He was fantastic yesterday.
He really was. I think the whole thing is set up by Boyd's outing. Right. You know, when there's sometimes, you know, Mike, when you really, you know, you really need a good outing from your starting pitcher. That was one of those days, the game three of that series. And Matthew came out there and, you know, he's got a unique fastball that his two seamer at the top of the zone that runs across the zone away from the righties into the lefties. He's got to have, you know, they don't pick it up. There's got to be some deception, and then he can run it inside. But he just, you know, I don't know if there were too many hard hit balls the whole game against him in six innings, maybe one or two that they barreled up. And then Shota, as you said, came out. I had a chance to talk to him yesterday as we got here into Houston. And I asked him, I go, how's the leg? Oh, it's good. You know, you had a great fastball. Yeah, good fastball yesterday. He had a good fastball to the righties inside. He wasn't overly thrilled about his split, and the movement of his split was going more sideways than it was down. So that'll be something he'll work on. But he was like, yeah, hold on. And you don't see many guys spend 2 months on the injured list, pitchers in particular, starting pitchers, and come back and be just as sharp as the day they left. That was amazing to me.
So, Ron, have to ask you, because of the way we came into this segment, the disgust in your voice was obvious. Wilson Contreras is somebody that has triggered you before, and he might trigger you again as early as next week.
Oh, I'm
but
sure of it.
How do you explain what happened, the little brouhaha, as we have called it, at the end of the game? And Daniel Palencia, did he go too far? I just thought it was his emotions, and it was fine, and it was just the way that most closers will celebrate after a save that dramatic.
Yeah, I think Daniel, at the end of the day, was reacting to multiple things. One, a big save against Cardinals, and then also Wilson chirping at him from first base the whole time he was at first. He was chirping. So, you know, and then, you know, and for a young guy, then it's like, okay, it's time to shut up. I shut you up, you know. The thing is, I get that Wilson got upset immediately after getting hit by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. That just happens. I mean, you get, like, raging mad instantly because a guy's throwing a projectile at you and hits you at 100 miles an hour.
It hurts.
But then once you're – yeah, it hurts. It hurts a lot. But once your brain and the logic of, you know, using your brain kicks in, you go, well, they just brought the tying run to the plate. They don't want to do that. So you put your head down and you walk to first base and shake it off, the pain, but you know that they're not doing that on purpose. You know what I mean? So I understood that, but he can't, that last step doesn't happen all the time. And he gets, you know, he lets his emotions take over and it just continues to take over. And even Burleson, who was standing on second base, is like, Wilson, calm down. He's giving him the old hands down, like, relax. You know, you're going to get picked off first base and the game's going to be over. And I even said that on the air. I'm like, I was hoping Michael Bush would backpick him from the pitcher because Wilson was so hot that he just wasn't in right frame of mind to be running the bases. But they didn't, and it ended up Daniel got the strikeout, and that worked out great.
And I don't say this lightly, but I wonder, are you doing yourself a disservice by showing that sort of out-of-control emotion? Because if I'm in a tight game and I know something's going – If you accidentally hit him or if you throw at him, you know the guy's going to lose his stuff. I'm just saying that's not a message I would want to send out to Major League Baseball.
Correct. 100%. We all have been there where we lose it a little bit and you gotta get it back, I guess. Here's the example. Ohtani got hit in Los Angeles last week when they were playing the Padres and it was going back and forth at the beanballs.
Right. Yes.
In the last one, the dugout, they're jumping over the railing of the dugout, his team, to protect him. And he waves them back, go back to the dugout. Let's let this be over. Done. Okay, we're done. So, you know, I don't know if I could have quite been Ohtani in that situation.
That's a great comparison, Coom. That's a great contrast.
But that's the thing that you go, okay, this has got to be over. this isn't good for our. If you're the best team, that's not good for your team getting drilled all the time and drilling them. That's not good, you know. So that's the difference.
So let's go back a couple nights. We had a lot of conversation about Pete Crow Armstrong and his just mental mistake in center field when he thought that there was three outs and he did a little pirouette and runner scored from second base. And then later in the game, I feel like it was an even maybe a worse decision to bunt with runners on first and third in that situation when you are the cleanup hitter. How did you think the Cubs handled that with Craig Counsell? He said he texted him after the game but didn't really make a big deal about it. There are some managers who might have made a bigger deal about it. What did you think about the way the Cubs handled it?
I thought it was fine. I got no problem with what Counts did. I think Counts does a pretty good job of understanding his players. And, you know, at the end of the day, you really need Pete Crow Armstrong to play great baseball. So the last thing you want to do is be, you know, old school crusty manager and rip him a little bit. You know, so and then have him go down and his confidence go down. And we're seeing his confidence down, right? I mean, he's doing it to himself. We saw that the last two ball games since that's happened. You know, he's beating himself up over some of this and trying to do a little too much. And, you know, that's one of those things, and that's him. You know, you're going to have that. I don't think you have to do much to Pete as far as, you know, getting on him at all. I think he's a young guy that wants to succeed so bad and be great that he's one of those guys you got to constantly try to make sure that he's up and playing with confidence and kind of in that positive frame of mind. Because, you know, I've seen it the last few days. He's just beating himself up over a few plays, and in 162 games, we're going to have some bad days. It's just the way it is. You got to turn the page.
Ron Coomer on the Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of early pay. More at huntington.com/yourmoney. I'm curious, Ron, when you think of Kyle Tucker back in Houston, what does that say to you? Do you have a little something else? Do you have a little extra oomph when you're going against a team that you one time played for? Is it not sort of a natural way to feel about things?
I'm glad they traded them to us and we're here. Put it that way. I got traded from the White Sox to the Dodgers, and I hit more home runs against the White Sox than any other team in baseball. So that would be an absolute yes. I think it's just human nature, right? I mean, we all, you know, and he was a star player here and kind of, you know, made his way in the league here in Houston. And, you know, they traded him away. So, you know, I would, and I love the fact that he's, you know, somewhat rested. Counts is getting him some days where he's DHing instead of, you know, playing right field. So you're giving him a little mental break somewhat. So I think he's pretty rested, and when he's rested, you see his bat come alive. I expect him to have a really good series this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's fun to compare his numbers with Paredes because they're more similar than you would expect. But I also think, Coom, looking at this weekend in terms of player-to-player comparisons, you look at Cam Smith and Matt Shaw, and you wonder about one versus the other, and you wonder which guy the Astros wanted first in those conversations about trade talks. And as it pertains to Matt Shaw, what's been going wrong with him, and how can he fix it?
For Matty, I think he's got some things going on in his swing. When you watch him at the plate, he's having a lot of there's a lot of movement with his head. There's, you know, he's getting back to some of that. And when your head is moving, and what I mean by that is your head is moving towards the pitcher, you're not seeing the baseball and you're not recognizing the pitch early enough. So we're seeing a lot of inside pitches that he's flinching and coming back that are strikes. And, you know, that just tells me that he's not picking up the ball real well. And then his swings are, you know, you're having the result that he's having. You know, he's getting jammed a lot. So he just, you know, there's got to be there's every hitter has these checks and balances in their game and in their stroke. And for him, his first and foremost is keeping his head still so he can recognize the pitch. It sounds very easy, but it is not. And he is dealing with some of that now. I just see a lot of check swings, a lot of half, you know, flinch and then falling off the plate, you know, because he thinks the ball's inside and it's, you know, it's not. So he's got to quiet that head down a little bit. And if he can do that, you know, when he does that, then his swing is okay. He had a couple swings yesterday that were very good. So, you know, those are some of the things he's got to work at.
So we saw two excellently pitched games, and now here you go into Houston. Cade Horton is going to pitch tonight. Colin Ray has something to prove maybe on Saturday. And Jameson Taillon, he bounces back pretty well, but he needs a bounce back on Sunday. What are you expecting from the pitching staff in this series?
Well, you hope that you get a great pitch series for the Cubs. I do believe, you know, like today now, power arms in this ballpark usually do pretty good. It's the guys that have, you know, that are trying to pitch around the ballpark, so to speak, because of the short porch in the left. You know, you can make some mistakes and then they get you. And this team, you know, some of their hitters really know how to use that short porch and left, like the hitters used to and still do, I'm sure. I just don't see it as much in Fenway Park. So, you know, Cade tonight, he's got to be on the attack with his heater. And if he is, that's a great thing. And I expect J-Mo also to come back. Colin, to me, it's all about his fastball command. But J-Mo's an extreme guy that has to have great command. And he does, usually. He's had last couple, it has not been perfect command. He's left some balls in the middle of the plate, and he's paid the price for them. But there were six starts in a row, six or seven, that he went six plus and was just outstanding. So, you know, it's a slight correction for him, and hopefully he'll make that correction and get back on that streak he was on.
Coop, you're so good at answering hitting questions. I have to ask you about Michael Busch. I think he is a guy who, when you look at his numbers alone, you think, well, he's making an all-star run. This is a guy who's coming into his own, and you start ranking Cub hitters, and you don't go too far down the list until you get to Michael Busch. And then I stopped myself because then I realized they don't trust him against left-handed hitting or pitchers because he's only got like 36 at-bats against lefties. I know he's only hitting 111, but how do you get better at something when you're not allowed to try to do it more often? And this is a guy that is an all-star caliber first baseman. So how do you explain and understand how they're treating Michael Busch with left-handers?
Well, it's to me, the idea of him hitting against left-handers, that's going to come. He's going to eventually do it. But that's not how the team was set up, David. The team was set up, you signed a high-profile winner in Justin Turner, and he was the guy that was going to play against left-handed pitching somehow, some way. Well, the way the team is set up right now, he's got to play first base, and that's where he's going to play. So that's, you know, you made that decision with him in spring training, and, you know, I don't know, you know, he has had his struggles this season, so how long that will last is to be determined. But at the end of the day, I just say celebrate with what Bushy's doing. He's the perfect guy to look at and go, he got an opportunity. He got traded from the Dodgers here. He got an opportunity, which is like getting a gold bar, to say, we're going to give you a chance to be a starting player in the big leagues. And let's see what you do with it. And what did he do with it? He ran with it like as good as you could possibly do. He worked his butt off at first base, and I watched it day after day after day from my booth. With his work at first, now he's become a really good defensive first baseman. And he's doing the same thing with his swing, and he's covering pitches and hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And I'm really happy for him. It just goes to show you, some guys, they work hard, and the hard work is paying off. I love his whole story and what he has done for the Cubs. It's just a great way to show your young kids, this, if you do this, good things can happen. That's the Michael Bush story.
I'm really wondering if Jed, being as forthright as he's been, he's done interviews all over the place, and he's talked about needing a starting pitcher and seeking a starting pitcher. There have been reports that Mitch Keller is the guy that they're talking about, that they've been talking to Pittsburgh about him. Do you follow that sort of thing? Do players in the locker room hear all those rumors as they're going on? I'm just wondering, what does the transparency mean to the team?
I would say guys hear it, because a lot of times you don't have a choice. You know, there's a lot of people in the clubhouse, and there's a lot of questions being asked, and then there's social media and all the ways you can, you know, get on a computer and then you see what's being said and or hear what's being said, and you know, so you hear it. But I would hope, you know, I did not play in this era of all this, the ability to get all this information, you know, constantly about what's right. being said. I would hope, Mike, that guys would not read it too much and just stay away from it and concentrate on when you look in the mirror on that guy. You know, that's the best thing you can do as a player, is concentrate on being a good winning teammate and concentrate on your game and that guy in the mirror that you look at. That's the best thing you can do to help your team, is make sure you're covering yourself and doing what you're supposed to do, help your team win, and let the noise kind of be noise. It's easy to say. It's not easy to do, but some guys do a better job of it than others. But that was my way of just, you know what? If I do my job real well, I'm going to be just fine. That's what I would do.
Great stuff, Ron. Always a joy. Appreciate your time. Have a great weekend in Houston.
Yeah, enjoy the city.
We will, and you guys have a great weekend, too. Great to talk to you. Dust, we're back.
He's raising his fists in support and not shaking them at you.
No.
Right, exactly.
He's a happier man today.
Yes,
Great stuff.
That's good stuff.
See Thanks, Rod. God bless.
Thanks, Ron.
That is our guy, Ron Coomer.
Dustin is more Palencia than Contreras right now.
There you go.
Pounding his chest. Sweating.
You're listening to Raheem and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Tying run at third, go-ahead run at second. Here's the 2-1. Swinging a big chop toward third, charging Arenado, barehands it, and throws to first in time. Ball game over. Arenado barehanded it, rifled it to first, getting Swanson by half a step, and the ball game is over.
That was Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer on the score as the Cubs lost 8-7 to the Cardinals in game two of this series in St. Louis. This is Rahimi and Harris with Mark Brody on 670 The Score. And unfortunately, Dansby Swanson getting into a bit of the hitting pattern that we saw earlier in the season. It was most glaring when we saw the numbers last night. Swanson, with runners in scoring position, is now, for the season, batting 141. He has 27 strikeouts in those scenarios compared to 22 RBIs. He also has 7 walks in that total as well. But 141 with runners in scoring position. And I know I'm hard on him, but it's partially because he's the Cubs' highest paid player. He's who they wanted to build around. He's the one who is making $177 million with the contract. And unfortunately, I expect him to do more in that scenario. OPS combined is 420 with runners in scoring position. And right now, as it stands, Swanson is your number 5 hitter in the lineup. And when it just comes to optics, your highest paid player shouldn't be the one who's got those numbers with runners in scoring position. Not in today's Major League Baseball. Pay somebody else, pay Kyle Tucker to make that not the case. But either way, it says a lot, unfortunately, about what we're seeing out of him offensively. I'd say at this point, the past season and a half.
Listen, I've been an advocate since the start of the season. We can go back, right? The Dansby Swanson should be a little bit higher because, remember, they had Matt Shaw initially in that five hole. The batting order looks so different because Nico Horner was a bottom third hitter at the start of the season. Remember that. But to your point, Layla, he's played more games batting fifth than anywhere else. And in 45 games started batting fifth, he's batting .215 with a .267 on base percentage and a .387 slug. Now, the slug I can live with. That's 8 home runs in that. But out of what you just talked about, in those at-bats, those plate appearances where he's had runners in scoring position, it's not just that he's 11 for 78. It's the fact that of those 11 hits, he's had a double, a triple, and a home run. And if you're going to do what you did to start this series and bat that man cleanup, it's a lot on Craig Counsell. Because in 6 games now where he's batted cleanup for the team, he is now 2 for 24. That's a .083 batting average.
No, it's 83.
I know it's a small sample size. What? With a 120 on base percentage and an .083 slug.
83.
Those 2 hits, by the way, were, yes, singles. So if you look at where he's batted elsewhere in the order, when he bats 7th, 7 games there, batting .417. When he bats 8th, 9 games
there.
There
we go.
.387. Uh-huh. And OPS is above 1.3 7th, 1.1 8th. He's got to bat lower in the order. Nico should bat ahead of him. Yes, but he's got a bat lower in the order.
I think part of the issue for me is knowing who was available when the Cubs wanted to sign a shortstop. And they talk about intelligent spending. When you consider Trey Turner was available, Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts. And they talk so much about how they wanted to spend their money compared to the other contracts that we saw. I think all of that is great in theory. But if in practice, the person that you made the most valuable on your team has an OPS this season of 706. That's a concern for me. You just need more offensively out of the guys that you want to have value for you. Even if overall, that number is lower relative to the others I just mentioned contract-wise.
And as Marshall outlined very well, look, he had the slump at the beginning of the year, and then Craig Counsell did what he had to do. Finally, after chance after chance after chance, put him down in the order, he starts hitting everything. It's where he has like gotten, as you pointed out, it's where the bulk of his production has been. So it seems like a pretty simple solution, to be honest with you. It worked once for you, Kreggers. Let's try it again. Let's put him down in the lineup, and maybe this time, you have to keep him there. Part of the reason they don't is because of what you said at the beginning, Layla, or your overall overriding point, is that he's the highest paid player on the team. Do you really want to Jason Hayward this guy and sink him at the bottom of the lineup?
Hayward had a career average 5 war when he was signed to this team.
Yeah.
Swanson did not. We were concerned about the numbers offensively.
And yeah. A lot of this has to do with the fact that 203 and 200 are the batting averages for Carson Kelly in the months of May and June, respectively. That's why he got the bump up.
And it makes sense. And I don't want to be this hard on him necessarily, knowing what I know about his offensive profile. But I think everybody thought that it was going to get better.
I think so, too. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, too, I don't think Swanson was their first choice. I mean, he was sort of like what became available in that great shortstop class, as you pointed out. But he was a good player. Like, he didn't have the same war coming in, but he was still a player who was expected to do big things with the Cubs, and it just hasn't been consistent except for that very first half of his first year with the Cubs.
And on other teams, if it's the Dodgers, if it's the Mets, if it's somebody with higher payroll, we're not scrutinizing it as much because chances are you've signed a guy like Kyle Tucker to a big name contract. You know, you've signed other players to these massive deals. This is what is happening right now, and they've got to do what they can with the lineup right now to make it best for the individuals that they have, and that's why this gets so tough once you get to the number 5 through 9 in this.
What about the third baseman these days, too? Where you at?
Right.
So, you know.
So, obviously, a story we continue to track and we'll continue to watch, but it made itself known last night in the 9th inning, for sure, when the Cubs were down 8-7. We have more coming up here on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on The Score. We ask the question next, with the NBA draft being tonight, We're going to take a look at two contrasting processes. You've heard of trust the process, but I want to know, whose process do you trust? We'll play that game next.
Manager number 11, Craig Counsell.
Craig Counsell.
When I'm on Sports Talk Radio, I learn that just keep talking, and that's helpful, right?
MLB veteran for 16 seasons.
Swing and a bouncer, shortstop, Counsell throws, got him! Counsell picked it up clean and threw a strike to first.
Two-time World Series champion.
His teammates call him Rudy, and Rudy has just tied game one of the 2001 World Series with a first inning home run.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Pete Crow Armstrong. Well, you got Craig Counsell to smile and even laugh a little bit, so that's no small thing.
No, I got that guy busting out in belly laughs all the time.
How would you describe your relationship with the manager?
It's great. He's one of the best people I've been around in this game, no question about it. Such a thinker, and I think that really benefits us when it comes to in-game situations. And, you know, I think that benefits us in the clubhouse as well. When I think I can look at him and you know, see that we really got a guy who cares about us. And, you know, he cares about the game as a whole and the big picture that we're all playing for every day. So, I mean, Counts has done such a good job. I mean, dating back to last year when he started, he's just done such a good job of you know, leading a really good Cubby team.
Craig Counsell with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
The Cubs-Cardinals series continues tonight from St. Louis. Pregame coverage begins at 6:10 on The Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Craig Counsell's appearance is brought to you by the all-new Toyota on Edens in Northbrook. Visit toyotaonedens.com, and he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Craig, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good. Finally, the weather broke a little bit. Like, walking out last night, the show went and had a little dinner before the game last night.
Lawrence had tater tots. He was obsessed with getting the tater tots, Craig.
I shared the tater tots, though.
You did.
Craig.
You did. It was very nice.
So we're good.
Are you a tater tots guy, Craig?
No, not a fan. My mom made me eat them when I was like 8 years old. Didn't go well. Never eaten them since.
Really?
Wow.
Are you a French fry person?
Yeah, I'd prefer French fries. Yeah, it's just the tater tot. I'll never do it again. I'll never do it.
So does this
feel like punishment? It'd feel like punishment for me to eat tater tots because it was that night because I had to finish the tater tots.
So does this all go all the way out to like perhaps you're at an Arby's? Would a Craig Counsell get potato cakes, or is that too much like a tater tot?
Good question.
I would not eat a tater tot. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never been to Arby's and they ordered potato cakes.
All right. Not a good question. I take it back.
That's a bad question.
Bad question. That was Pete Crow Armstrong in our open talking about you, Craig. It's obviously a good relationship. You guys both talked about what happened last night after the game. What do you do with Pete in the middle of that game after that happens? Because you know he's a smart kid. He's already mad at himself. Like, did you talk about it with him then after the inning or after the game? How does that go down while the action is happening?
No. I mean, I sent Pete a text last night after the game, making sure he was all right, and that's it.
So you don't even need to discuss it during the game because you know he knows better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you ever forget how many outs there were as a player? Craig Counsell, the player?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
What happened? Tell us a story, if one that comes to mind.
I mean, I caught a pop-up and ran off the field. Nothing bad happened in the game necessarily, but, you know. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I caught a pop-up, started running off the field, and because I didn't know how many outs. Now I got saved because it was a different situation. You know, And that's happened to every player that's played. You know, just like we confuse, you know, the guy that doesn't hustle to first base. Like, we think every player hustles to first base on every single play. They don't. We just complain about the time when the first baseman drops the ball, right?
Yeah, but that's, you know, it's interesting because two people got removed from games last night, or not, didn't get removed, excuse me, but two people forgot how many outs there were. The other one was O'Neill Cruz in Pittsburgh, but there was a hustle issue and the manager removed him. I'm not asking you to comment on that, but like, you know, Pete's mistake is not one of not hustle or any or not. It's just what
it's just a mistake. I mean, it's just a mistake. It's that's all it is. I mean, it's a mistake. And to like, you know, we don't want to make mistakes. Nobody wants to make mistakes. Pete doesn't want to make mistakes. We make mistakes. We're human. You know, if you think there's a reason why he would make those mistakes again, you know, we'll try to figure out a way to coach it better, and we'll try to figure out a way to help Pete. I don't. It was a mistake that was made, and you live with it. We're not perfect.
After a couple of really strong months of Jameson Taillon, the last couple of outings have been rough. Is there anything that connects the start from last night to the start versus Milwaukee from your point of view?
Well, I mean, you know, JMO's a command pitcher. Like, the command is extremely important to him. And, you know, last night, sometimes the game is, did you get away with your mistakes? And he did not get away with his mistakes last night. And so that means, you know, there's two things. You know, you try to just make better pitches, and it's something certainly JMO's capable of. I think you always go back and look at, like, your pitch selection. You always go back and look, am I getting predictable? Those are things that are evaluated kind of post every start. You know, so you continue to do that and continue to find maybe patterns you're falling into. But I think, you know, JMO, you know, his walk totals are so low because he really commands every pitch, and he has to pitch on the edges of the strike zone. And he has to give hitters different looks. And so we just got to get a little more, you know, we just got to get a little more fine in those areas. That's what leads to good performance for JMO.
The edges of the strike zone. Yeah. So like one of those homers was on 0-2 and got a little too much of the plate, right? It's like, it seems to be a difficult thing to try to throw everything on those edges, especially 0-2. Like, you want to have competitive pitches. You don't want to be too far out of the zone, but you can't catch too much of it. I guess that's pitching.
Yeah. I mean, I think on 0-2, it's actually easier. I think on 0-2, it's easy to be pretty aggressive out of the zone. On 3-2 and 2-2 and 2-1, you know, then you know, the 2-0 throwing a changeup, you know, away and not right, you know, that's when it's hard, right? But it's something JMO's been really good at throughout his career.
You know, so speaking of, you know, hitting the edges of the zone, the broadcast the other night was talking about Ben Brown as not necessarily throwing competitive pitches or throwing non-competitive pitches
on 0-2.
So that's why it's coming to mind as a parallel. Is that part of the challenge for Ben, is to make sure he throws competitive pitches even in those situations?
Yeah, I think, you know, we kind of define that as like making the hitter responsible for every pitch, right? So a non-competitive pitch, it's like a, you know, an automatic take for the hitter, right? He's not responsible for the pitch. So it's like you're playing with three balls instead of four. And so, yeah, that's always a key, I think, attribute. If you watch some of the great pitchers, it's what they do so well, is that, you know, either misses are, you know, a ball outside the strike zone or a ball below the zone, a ball above the zone, that those are their misses. And JMO's absolutely great at that. He's very good at that. But that's what you see some of the great pitchers be able to do. And the miss is never, you know, bounce in the dirt, right? It's below the strike zone, so it's really hard to hit.
With a young pitcher, does confidence in command have anything to do with that type of situation where you might have a young pitcher that says, man, yeah, I know that I'm supposed to throw something that's close, but I don't want to put us in a bad situation by giving up a big hit on two strikes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, confidence is what it is. I mean, I think command is, you know, it's a trickier skill. You know, we certainly measure it. It's a skill and it's a talent, right? And it's developed over time also. It kind of improves over time with pitchers generally. So it's something that's always, it's in the development process of just, you know, thousands and thousands of throws.
Did you consider the bullpen for Ben instead of AAA, and why was AAA the best choice?
Well, we you know, I think from a roster perspective, it's the best choice. It's how we're navigating these games. I think continuing as a starting pitcher is the best choice. Keeping him on a consistent work schedule, which, you know, which is the between game schedule, which is just as important. Probably an opportunity to limit some innings here a little bit for a little bit of a stretch. So all those things I thought made it important to just to be a AAA to be the option.
How has Shota's rehab gone? And I know that he's been on the trip. How good has it been to have him be back around the major league club?
Yeah, I mean, rehab has went, you know, rehab is for anybody, I think it's kind of a painstakingly feels a little monotonous, right? But I think Shota sees the end of the light at the end of the tunnel here coming, and he'll take the ball tomorrow and ready to go. So we're happy that he's back, happy he's back with the team, and I know he's looking forward to pitching tomorrow.
To get someone back like that is really important. How far can you push him over the next couple of starts, or is he full go, no limitations?
No, I think we'll be cautious, certainly, the first couple starts. You know, I think anybody coming off rehab, you're going to be cautious with that.
Craig Counsell with us here on Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Known tater tot hater,
oh,
Craig Counsell.
Oh, my God. The Orida people are on the hotline right now, dropping their sponsorship. I don't think they have a deal.
They do not.
No, they do not. You're safe. Craig, can you feel if anxiety is growing within a clubhouse? Like when, you know, do you have an anxiety thermometer? Or like, do you walk around, like, wonder, you know, checking in on that kind of thing? How does it concern you in that regard?
No.
No. Okay. But you know humans, you are one. Like, anxiety can show up and rise, and it can affect people. Are you worried about your guys getting anxious when, you know, a couple games under 500 for the month, three other teams playing real well in the division, you know, losing a game like that?
No.
All right, Lawrence, would you like to throw three more questions about anxiety at the man?
No.
But I mean...
Wait, I'm going to say like Craig.
Okay.
No.
Okay. No.
So, no. I do. I am interested, though, like from a manager's perspective, what the last week of baseball has been like because of the oppressive heat element that has been in play. So, Craig, what's that like for you? Like, what steps do you take with like the training staff, or is all that stuff kind of presented to you instead of you directing it?
No, I mean, we have certainly. You know, our team nutritionist and our strength and conditioning staff is kind of all over this part of it. And, yeah, I mean, Frank, it showed his game tomorrow it's been hot. It was Saturday and Sunday at Wrigley were extremely hot. I think you saw some, this, you know, the umpire, one of the Mariners pitchers, a ball boy, unfortunately, that, were affected by the heat. So, you do everything you can, and just realize that it's hot, and you try to just keep a closer eye on the people, the catcher, the pitcher that are affected by it. And that's the best you can do. I know tomorrow here in St. Louis, the day game, the night game, you know, the night makes a difference for sure. The day game tomorrow is going to be a super hot one.
What was the hottest surface that you played on?
You know, the artificial turf surfaces, I mean, this was famous. St. Louis was famously one of the places, you know, in the middle of the summer when you'd get it on the turf. That was, you know, probably one of the worst places for sure on the turf in St. Louis.
Yeah, those things, like, you start to look back in, like, old baseball highlights,
and
you can see the haze, mm-hmm. like, coming off of it, and then you'll see, like, the thermometer on the field, and it's 115 on the field versus it being, like, 95
sure.
for anyone who's walking around.
And, Craig, I could never tell if it was Old Bush or Riverfront or Three Rivers or the Vet. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, no, the same thing. All big circles, every stadium.
All big concrete circles with fake turf. Yeah, for sure.
So Craig, listen, we have Nico on every week, and we love Nico. And we've been saying as a show that June was going to be the month where he would hit the home run. He gets the home run last night. I'm hoping for more because I had it set at 3.5. How good is it for a player that's been doing everything else that he can to help you try to win to know that he got the ball up in the air and got it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a player who flirted with zero many years in his career, just not having zero there makes you feel pretty good.
Flirted with zero. Was it a romantic kind of flirting? I mean,
that's anxiety, Spiegs. You know what I mean? Like that's anxiety.
I got it.
This other stuff, not anxiety.
No, okay. Well, that's good.
Well, there's 80 more games to be played, so there's, you know, there's not a lot of anxiety that you have to necessarily. We're probably more anxious. People who are Cubs fans, people who are Cubs observers might be more anxious about this than the actual clubhouse.
But the thing is, like, the anxiety, I love hearing that it's a no. Because even for fans, this is what you want, Craig. Like, you want to have a good team going through a baseball season. I mean, the Mets just lost 9 of 10. The Yankees lost 9 of 12. This stuff happens worse than it's even happening for the Cubs, right? This is baseball that's happening right now.
Yeah, it's a season, and if you sign up to be a baseball fan, the great part about signing up as a baseball fan and the great part about baseball seasons are it's a ride and it's a roller coaster, and it means you're built to withstand the ups and the downs, and I that's what you should love about baseball. It really is that you're willing to kind of take that ride of all the ups and downs of a season and the journey of it. That's the greatest part about our sport, and you got to survive that, and you got to thrive in it. It's the fun and beauty of our sport.
See, that's the goods. That's the goods right there. One home run in 2008 in 110 games played. I wonder when that one came. When the one came, it's a big deal to get that one.
2000. I don't remember.
Okay.
I wish I did.
Yeah.
Should.
No, that's our job.
I feel like you're kind of picking on Craig right now.
No,
Speaks.
I'm not. I don't think so.
All right.
He didn't like the no answers. You didn't like them.
I did actually. I enjoyed the hell out of those. Actually, I'm here for it. I'm here for all of it. Hey, when Pete decides to bunt last night. You know, it's a tough spot. And you explained it after the game. You know, it's against the lefty and everything like that and all it could. I guess my question is, for a young player, is that a choice that at all can be something that ends up compounding from the earlier mistake? Like one mistake leads to another one, that kind of thing. Are you concerned at all about that from Pete?
Look, I mean, I think we were concerned about the result of the play, right? Like, you know, if the bunt's a good bunt and we tie the game and it's a base hit, like we love the play, right? You know, I give Pete some freedom there. This is a play that's definitely, we'll talk about it today Pete and I will talk about, but it's a tough call. Like, I think, you know, sometimes the player walks up there and the player knows best. I mean, what are you trying to avoid there? You're trying to avoid a strikeout, right? How do you feel against the pitcher, right? He was swinging the first at bat, took a strike. Not very common that Pete does that, actually, in our runs in any at bat, but especially with runners in scoring position. So I think he felt like the best way for him to get the run in might have been a tough at bat for him was to hopefully take a bunt with him. He didn't execute the bunt. You know, that's unfortunate. That's really the thing that just didn't happen. He just didn't execute well.
Matthew Boyd goes tonight. He's been really good. What's been the reason why he's been so good?
Yeah, I mean, I think Matthew's got some deception to him, and it's not just like it's good stuff too. I mean, he's gonna, and the fastball changeup combo is challenging for hitters. There's a big speed discrepancy, and he did the, you know, for lack of a better word, the pitches just look the same coming out. So that's where he's great at getting some swing and miss, and his fastball kind of plays up in the zone, so he can throw it up and kind of beat hitters, and it's a lot of lazy fly balls. And then he just really knows what he's doing. I mean, this, you know, the kind of thought with Jed and Carter and everybody signing Matthew Boyd is this is this is a good pitcher who's just unfortunately hasn't been able to stay healthy in his career. And we thought we were well positioned to get a healthy Matthew Boyd, and that's been an effective Matthew Boyd.
It's a hell of a signing. Craig, good stuff. That answer on the beauty of the sport and wanting the season to be this much fun and be the roller coaster, that's great stuff. So thanks so much. Go get him tonight.
All right. Thanks, guys.